some of Shivindu's lines are very not just revealing but very evocative. We just read this line, from dusk to greater dusk. Normally when we read Shivindu, we know the well known lines, from dawn to greater dawn. But it's very interesting that to move from dawn to greater dawn, there is a passage when you actually move from dusk to greater dusk. It's very interesting. Even in everyday life, you cannot but go through that. So right now, he's sharing with us that part of the journey where he moves from dusk to greater dusk. This part we'll go through quickly and then go on to the next canto. As he's going, page 217, around him grew a gaunt spiritual blank, very thin spiritual blank, a threatening waste, a sinister loneliness. Everything is inverted, that's why it is the shadow. There is a zero sign of the Supreme, but this is another kind of blank. In fact, Shivindu says in one of his writings that people talk of trance, etc. So he says not every trance means that one has gone into the higher regions. Sometimes one can fall into these regions, and this also mimics that void, that calm, that there is a loneliness which is a divine loneliness. But there is another loneliness which is sinister, which is full of fear, full of horror. A threatening waste, a sinister loneliness that left mind bare to an unseen assault. An empty page on which all that willed could write. There is another kind of empty page where we give ourselves to the divine to write his will. But there is another kind of emptiness where we become automatons in the hands of any and every cosmic force. That's why in the Mother, in the very first letter, Sri Aurobindo tells us that it is not that surrender which makes you like an automaton at the mercy of any and every cosmic force. Then one will be misled very far. But a conscious and willing and glad submission. It is surrender to the divine, and the divine alone he qualifies. Because otherwise, if one thinks, oh, I have surrendered to Mother, so whatever happens is coming from her, it's very dangerous. That's why she says human beings must pass through a phase where they must develop an individuality. Otherwise, one remains prey to all kinds of forces, and that individuality they must offer completely to the divine and put it at his service. Otherwise, one remains a plaything of these forces. An empty page on which all that willed could write stark, monstrous messages without control. Why? Because reason is gone. That little light which in the human twilight does the work of a lamp, that has been slain, that has been taken away. So anything could write itself. All kinds of suggestions. That's why Shivindu says, don't accept any and every suggestion that arises, that suggestion, especially if those suggestions, one, there are two kinds of suggestion. One, suggestions of fear, depression, failure, that is coming from these worlds. Another, paradoxically, suggestions of being great, spiritual ambition, you are born to do a great work and you are the great instrument of Mother and you are, you know, all kinds of things, suggestion which magnify and aggrandize the ego. So this is the double way in which these entities can trap. Few lines below, he heard the grisly voices that deny, assailed by thoughts that swarm like spectral hordes, a prey to the staring phantoms of the gloom. Now he is going right into the pit where he is seeing the gloom, the horror, the atmosphere of sadness and suffering. Driven by a strange will down, ever down. Oh, we missed a line, and terror approaching with its lethal mouth, driven by a strange will down, ever down, the sky above a communic of doom, he strove to shield his spirit from despair. So repeatedly Madhuren Shubhendra said, despair, depression, these are direct attack of the hostile forces, and one should be very, very careful not to harbor them, because they can really dislodge everything. Then seized the abodes of creatures and their forms, and solitude wrapped him in its voiceless folds. All vanished suddenly like a thought expunged. Absolutely the reverse of the experience that one can have even while going up. When Sri Aurobindo speaks of Nirvana, he speaks of the mind expunged from thought. Care, thought drops away. All is abolished. Save the mind, all is abolished, save the mute alone. He describes Nirvana in this term. It's opposite. It's a shadow. So here it is. All vanished suddenly like a thought expunged. His spirit became an empty listening gulf, void of the dead illusion of a world. There is one way that the illusion of the world vanishes. There is another side also, because the world is between the world is a manifestation. So between the inconscient and the supreme, there is this play of forms and names. So either side, if one goes, it's abolished. But the difference is, as one ascends up, while the forms and appearances may be abolished before the true sense and meaning is given, but one experiences that deep peace and ananda and light that comes from the divine. Whereas one, when one goes into this side, there is greater and greater terror, gloom, sadness. He was alone with the grey python night, a dense and nameless nothing, conscious, mute. That is also a nothing. It's conscious and mute. That's why there is often a certain kind of approach which sprang up as an offshoot of Buddhism, but a very dangerous kind of approach, where one is taught, you know, divine is beyond mind, so just drop the mind and you leap into that. It's very, very dangerous. It's called as a shortcut. But actually, if you see the method of Buddha, Buddha spoke of the Eightfold Path. Buddha spoke of Dharma. He spoke of Sangha. He spoke of surrender. Buddham Sharnam Gacchami, Sangham Sharnam Gacchami, Dhammam Sharnam Gacchami. He spoke of discrimination. All these things. Because that is the path of ascent. But there is another kind of path taking from that the mind fabricates everything, and you know, that is beyond mind. So drop the mind. It doesn't matter what you do or care or don't care. And it can be so dangerous, because it can lead us, instead of going there, to a totally opposite state. And one may well feel that one is living in some kind of consciousness, because this is a world of lie. We have just read, a lie was there, a truth, and truth a lie. And it's even shown as a shortcut, that all this mind creates fragments, systems. It's just structures. Reality is beyond mind. But very often when one is not prepared and tries to take a leap beyond mind, one actually lands up below mind and becomes a prey of these forces. Next page. A formless void oppressed his struggling brain. A darkness grim and cold benumbed his flesh. A whispered grace suggestion chilled his heart. Hailed by a serpent force from its warm home and dragged to extinction in bleak vacancy. And that's why in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, it is not dropping the mind, but illumining it like the Vedic seers. Not abolishing emotions, but filling it with divine love. What a beautiful prayer the mother has. Prayer of 19th June 1914. Flood our minds with the splendor of thy light. Fill our hearts with the delight of thy love. Grant that we may effectuate thy victory. What a positive movement. Hope strangled, perished in his empty soul. So one of the things that these beings do is to abolish hope, abolish faith, abolish the will to live and strive. This is their characteristic action. They paralyze will, they paralyze faith, they paralyze hope. Whereas the reverse is the action of the gods. Belief and memory abolished, died. And all that helps the spirit in its course. All aspiration they steal. Belief, memory. One had such beautiful experiences, but say, what you have done, what you have had. 40 years you have just wasted time. They make everything vanished. What joy, what delight of contact with her. And it just creates that kind of state. A nameless and unutterable fear. As a sea nears a victim bound and still. Image of Andromeda and Perseus has come here. Andromeda is bound to the stake. And she is of course symbol of nature. And Perseus comes, is the evolutionary force, and releases her, and she is bound to the stake and left to die, and the sea is coming to swallow her. This image is exactly the same. As a sea nears a victim bound and still, the approach alarmed his mind forever dumb of an implacable eternity of pain inhuman and intolerable. This is a real, real experience. In the Vedas it is described in the story of Sunshape, who is bound to the stake to die as a sacrifice, as a sacrificial being. And again he is bound to the stake to be swallowed by the sea. And he doesn't know what to do. And then he aspires to the great gods, and Varuna comes. Varuna is the vast consciousness. And he has also the divine sight. So he breaks the three knots with which he is tied, the three knots of ego, the mental, vital and physical, and releases him once again. And it's really true, this intolerable pain. We have in another mythology, Greek mythology, where Prometheus, who has stolen fire from the gods, is condemned to intolerable pain and suffering. And I have a feeling that sometimes people who go through in constant, continuous pain, burning pain, this pain, that pain, all through the body, these realms are acting. So it's very important all the more to open to the light. Because they inflict that. So here it is an intolerable pain. And one cannot explain it. One cannot understand it. Nothing works. Because these are the parts which are active. I don't have a remedy for this pain. So only divine can solve this. But here is a cause of pain inhuman and intolerable. It's a pain at all levels. This he must bear. His hope of heaven is estranged. He must ever exist without extinction's peace in a slow suffering time and tortured space. When this happens, time appears as if it's so long. Each second passes like heavy centuries. That's the interesting part. When one is depressed, you know, an hour passes like, my God, it is so long. Only 1 hour has passed. And when one is happy and in a state of ananda, days and weeks fly like hours. An experience which many people have when they come here. That we don't know how days have passed. It just happens without whether you do something or not, it just flies. So it's something very interesting because the time, space, domains are very different. The sense of time and space changes as we go in these realms or the higher realms. And in the place where once was luminous thought only remained like a pale, motionless ghost, an incapacity for faith and hope. And the dread conviction of a vanquished soul, immortal still but with its Godhead lost, self lost and God and touch of happier worlds. This is the state in which the soul can fall. But he endured stilled the vain terror, bore these smothering coils of agony and affright. In one of the places, mother says, endure, endure, endure. You must endure. Victory comes to the most enduring. Because this is a passage. Then peace returned and the soul's sovereign gaze. When one is caught up and if nothing else one can do, hope has gone, faith has gone, everything has gone. Just endure. The hour of victory will come. To the blank horror, a calm light replied, immutable, undying and unborn, mighty and mute, the Godhead in him woke and faced the pain and danger of the world. He mastered the tides of nature with a look. He met with his bare spirit naked hell. Thus he could write, my gaping wounds are 1,001. Shobindu in the God's labor. That what he has suffered and gone through we cannot imagine. Because yet to find the cure. He is not asking us to go through this. He is just reminding us that these things are there. And we must be very vigilant. Now comes the heart of things. From where is this immersed? Why is it there? Who are the beings who inhabit this world and feed upon our suffering and desire? That's why when we suffer, actually we strengthen these beings. If we really want the reign of suffering to end on earth, we should first stop being in love with suffering, pain, terror, fear, because we end up actually feeding them without knowing it, of course, most of the time. So one of the best service that one can do to the divine, one of the most difficult also, is to remain happy. That was the work given to Dara. When he came to mother, what work shall I do? Mother said, remain simple, be happy, that message. So he came after 3 days, mother, it's a very difficult work you have given. Be simple, remain happy. Keep yourself always open towards me. Do your work as well as you can. This is all that is asked for you, from you. To him, the mother had given, stay happy. Very difficult. If we can just remain happy, we do a great service to the world. We don't realize it. At least we don't feed these demons and make them fat by our suffering. So to remain cheerful, happy is really very beautiful. To remain confident of the grace, to be full of faith and hope. It's a beautiful work of the mother that one can do. And only in this state one can do mother's work. Because then we are on right foundation. Otherwise, when we are all the time, you know, full of depression and anger and, you know, oh, what will happen? Mother's work is going helter-skelter and one is full of agony oneself. Then we are actually creating more complications. So this is the state. So where does this emerge from? In the Vedic literature, we have seen this mother of falsehood is called Diti. She is, gives birth to Daityas, the children of division. And Aditi, undivided consciousness. Diti means division. She is the mother of the gods and she gives birth to the gods, Adityas. And she is very smart. Of course, she's smart, she's intelligent, she's everything. And glory of glories. So what she has done, one of her sons, she has cast into the womb of darkness. Marthand, he is the 8th son of Aditi. There are 7, but 8th one, she cast into the womb of darkness. And he is there hiding inside for his hour. So on the other end also, Aditi is there. And this son is beginning to emerge. So the task of Sri Aurobindo, one of the works is, to go through it right to the end so that this 8th son of Aditi, this supramental son which is hidden in the heart of earth, covered by darkness, wrapped within the folds of darkest nights, can emerge. So now he is taking us through that part. Canto 8, the world of falsehood, the mother of evil and the sons of darkness. We thought it has ended. then could he see the hidden heart of night. The labor of its dark unconsciousness revealed the endless, terrible, inane. A spiritless, blank infinity was there. So it is also infinite because it is the shadow. A nature that denied the eternal truth. In the vain, braggart freedom of its thought. My thought is highest. By thought I will find. My thought is free. Braggart of its thought. It was a nature that denied the divine. In the vain, braggart freedom of its thought. It's not a free thought. We think it is free. It's bound. There is that line in Who, where Sri Aurobindo says, we are bound by our thoughts and the pride and the pomp of our passions. We are bound by our thoughts which we hold, where we hold ourselves free. We think we are free, but actually it is bound, and when we brag about it, hope to abolish God and reign alone. Thought is the master of this world. There is nothing beyond it. Mind is all. Death will tell this much later to Savitri. Savitri, all that is very fine. You have wonderful language. I admire it. But you know, ultimately, it's a play of thought. You are playing with brilliant bonds of thought. There is nothing beyond it. If mind is all, renounce the hope of bliss. So that's up to the mind, its reign extends. There was no sovereign guest, no witness light. Unhelped, it would create its own bleak world. Its large blind eyes looked out on demon acts. We know the image of Dhritarashtra. Large blind eyes looked out on demon acts. Unable to recognize that a Draupadi is being disrobed. Its deaf ears heard the untruth. Its dumb lips spoke. Its huge misguided fancy took vast shapes. Its mindless sentience quivered with fierce conceits, engendering a brute principle of life. Evil and pain begot a monstrous soul. Of course, here soul is in the sense of a core. Their core was monstrous. The anarchs of the formless depths arose. They want to create disorder. This is a spirit of disorder and confusion. So in one of his letters, Sri Aurobindo says, how to recognize the action of the hostile forces. They create tremendous confusion. You speak one thing, one of the common action of the way hostile forces act. You speak one thing and it automatically gets translated in the other person's mind as something totally different. Now the other person speaks something to explain, and they play a game with human beings as puppets, and in this person's mind it gets translated into something else. So they end up fighting. At the end they realize they're speaking actually the same thing. It's a very common little experience of how these entities can play, and they create confusion because that's, and much of illness is an action of these beings because they like to create disorder. Wherever they come, they attack and create disorder. It's a spirit of anarchy. The anarchs of the formless depths arose. Of course, there is a divine anarchy. There is a spontaneous self-law of the divine that can unfold in each one. What Swami Vivekananda said, that the world will be ready for that true light when each one finds his own religion. It's a very high truth, profound truth, that each must discover his own truth and law of being that would lead us towards the heights. This is the catch. But that would lead us towards the light is lost. And we pick up that other, only one part, and it's turned into its shadow. Each becomes a law unto himself and lives for himself alone. This is the nature of this world. Great titan beings and demonic powers, world egos raked with lust and thought and will, vast minds and lives without a spirit within, impatient architects of error's house, leaders of the cosmic ignorance and unrest, and sponsors of sorrow and mortality, embodied the dark ideas of the abyss. The ideas of abyss is confusion, darkness, obscurity, denial of light, hostility towards truth, crushing away of love, all things which are true, giving beauty a hideous form and face. This is their way of being. And there were beings who embodied these ideas and actually worked for that. And of course, in the Indian Puranic literature, these are two beings. And in ancient literature of other forms of mysticism, there is one being. Mother speaks of this one being who is fourfold. So all the four powers, life, light, consciousness, and bliss, they become their opposite. So bliss becomes suffering and pain. Consciousness becomes unconsciousness, darkness. Truth becomes falsehood. Light, darkness. Life, death. So this is how they become their very opposite. And how they become opposite, and that's where the key comes. A point came where each of these beings was sent forth to create. And as they started creating, they thought, I am the one who is creating. They forgot the one whose glory shines through them. And that one little veil, and they fell into the depths of inconscience. So Shobindu says that the moment the one will to be many and a thin veil of ignorance came, its result was inevitably falsehood and inconscience, and there was no other way but now to go through the full cycle and the complete transformation. There was no other way except that. And then of course there is that beautiful mother's story where she says that when this happened, a cry came from the depths of the darkness and horror, and she plunged herself into it to save creation. So that is the thing which is pushing in the Vedas. This plunging into the darkness is the eighth son of Aditi. Her own light, her own consciousness, she has thrown into the dark abyss so that a bridge can be built. So something is there which remains unslain, immortal. Million times it will pass through the doors of darkness and death, and yet it will survive. So this is where Savitri also starts with that survivor of a slain past. So here is describing that those beings of this abyss, a shadow substance into emptiness came, dim forms were born in the unthinking void, and eddies met and made an adverse space in whose black folds being imagined hell. So at one level we can really say that hell and heaven are imaginations. We can also say hell and heaven are states of consciousness. And we can also say they are actual planes which have been created because of a certain kind of envelopment of light by darkness. Self-involution. His eyes piercing the triple plated gloom, obscurity, darkness, falsehood, identified their sight with its blind stare. Accustomed to the unnatural dark, they saw unreality made real and conscious night. A violent, fierce and formidable world, an ancient womb of huge calamitous dreams. So all sense of calamity and disaster comes from there. So we must, well, they can arise in human consciousness and pollute the mind with these kind of thoughts. So one should always keep exposing and offering it to the light, because all calamitous dreams arise from there and they enact their drama on earth. They become realities because on earth there are consciousnesses that support their action. It was the gate of a false infinite, an eternity of disastrous absolutes, an immense negation of spiritual things. So in that world, everything high and true and beautiful was negated. Again and again, when we go through these states where we think, is there really a God? Is there really divine? Is there really something called a spirit, soul, psychic being? Is it not all an imagination ultimately? We should be very careful, because these voices of the nights are whispering silently into our hearts. And if we encourage them, then we are caught in falsity's endless net. An immense negation of spiritual things, all once self-luminous in the spirit sphere, turn now into their own dark contraries. It's very interesting that when we are in a state of psychic contact or even a little uplifting into the higher realms, we never question the peace we are experiencing, the joy we are experiencing, the touch of the divine. We never question because it's so natural. But the moment we are outcast from that state, of course, not that always we question it, but sometimes these things can creep up and we begin to question that experience. But when we are again in that, it is self-evident. It's very interesting. So all that is self-evident there becomes a questioning doubt and an ignorance here. Being collapsed into a pointless void that yet was a zero parent of the worlds. This is pure physics. For those who are student of physics would know what is that pointless void full of that immense energy which burst out into the world, material world first. In conscience swallowing up the cosmic mind produced a universe from its lethal sleep. Bliss into black coma fallen, insensible, coiled back to itself, and God's eternal joy through a false, poignant figure of grief and pain, still dolorously nailed upon a cross, fixed in the soil of a dim, of a dumb, insentient world. These are actual things which have been known in traditions, in religious traditions, which have been lost in modernity because modern mind doesn't understand them. It understands only things which are seen by these senses. So it regards all the rest as a mass of superstition and beliefs. This was a phase that modernity and postmodernism had to go through. But this is a reality of inner life. And why does it do it? Sri Aurobindo is just giving us a small hint. Eventually they cannot stifle God's plan. Where birth was a pang and death an agony, lest all too soon should change again to bliss. So they make the process of evolution slow. Always the inconscient pulls it back. So whenever we hear this, sometimes even mystics say this, what is this birth? It is like death. It is such a sorrow. It is such a occasion to cry. So when mother was asked this as a realist, she said, no, it is not always a painful thing. Very matter of fact. Why should birth? Birth is a limitation, but one can have a conscious birth. And it's not that. It's a new adventure. It's a new journey, carrying from the past, going upward. But these realms can inspire such thoughts where birth was a pang and death an agony, lest all too soon should change again to bliss. Thought sat a priestess of perversity. Thought was turned towards pervert uses. We have already read that. On her black tripod of the triune snake, this is an occult symbol. Only Sri Aurobindo could tell us what really this is. We can surmise, but reading by opposite signs the eternal script. So normally we read from left to right. So you can also read from right to left. Reading by opposite signs the eternal script. So you read from the reverse. This is how it reads things. So that's why most of us are under its spell. So we say, what is God? He is a fiction of the mind. It is nothing but certain centers in the brain which get stimulated. Opposite signs. But when we look at from the top down view, the Aswath tree, then we would say with the Kena Upanishad, Yan man sana manute yena hur mano matang tadev brahman tam viddi nedam yadidam upasate. That which the mind can know not, but that by which the mind itself can be known, because the mind is born from that. Matter is born from that. Speech is born from that. Sense is born from that. The Purushukta speaks of the sacrifice of the Purusha, where each part of his being becomes something in this universe. But here there is an opposite reading. Matter becomes life. So life is nothing but matter eventually. Matter begins mind, becomes mind. It doesn't say mind has evolved in matter or manifested out of matter. Therefore, mind is nothing but a material play. Some neurons are babbling inside. And some people who are basically like us, they begin to, you know, have spiritual experiences. That too is nothing but a play of matter. So by reverse science, they read the eternal script. A sorceress reversing life's God frame. Okay, we can go a little below. Their suffering was nature's daily food, alluring to the anguished heart and flesh, and torture was the formula of delight. We have read that. And these are the beings who stage the dark drama of earth. They like to torture. When they take earthly forms, they cannot feel, you know, they don't feel that they have had food unless they make at least one person cry, wherever they are. Whether it's, you know, in a department or in somewhere else, they want to, you know, unless they see torture and suffering and pain, they don't feel happy. They like to do that because it's their food. And that's why one should always not give them their food. So one should just reply with a smile. There is a very nice line. A smile was her only reply to the bitter cruelties of earth. So when we learn to smile in the face of adversity, it's a subtle law of nature that adversity begins to vanish. Because it feeds on our own pain and suffering. It is its food. Again and again, Sri Aurobindo is reminding us. If we give it the food, if we are afraid before adversity, it will come more and more. If we, start cursing God, then it comes more and more. Because, you know, basically what we are doing, it wants us to turn away from the spiritual light. So it says, very good. If I give him little suffering, this fellow will break down. His faith will go. His hope will die. Very good. I am going to use this method. But if we reply with smile, reply it with a greater and more luminous faith, then it says, my God, this house I have no entry, barred. So they will slowly go away to some other house, and there are plenty. We should not worry about that. We will encourage them. And torture was the formula of delight. Pain mimicked the celestial ecstasy. Their good, a faithless gardener of God. Look at these lines. Watered with virtue, the world's upas tree, and careful of the outward word and act, and grafted his hypocrite bloom on native ill. All high things serve their neither opposite. Very interesting. At one place he speaks of manufactured virtue and vice. Artificiality. So what these beings, they will use any logic. Careful of the outward word and act. So one of their signs is they are, you know, full of suspicion. What you have said, what you have written, be very careful. You know, they are full of that fear and suspicion all the time. They carry it inside themselves. Because this is a world like that. But the spontaneous impulse of the soul, which is full of courage, full of faith, that is lost. Careful of the outward word and act, and grafted his hypocrite blooms on native ill. It is the tree of ill. On this there is a bloom of virtue. How? It cannot bloom. So, you know, like people have artificial flowers. So, they look so much like real. Now even they can sprinkle perfume. But something is missing. To those who can see will know it. So, it's a hypocrite bloom. All high things serve their neither opposite. The forms of gods sustained a demon cult. Heaven's face became a mask and snare of hell. Kali, the great liberator, she turns into a goddess where people offer animal as sacrifice and think they are pleasing the goddess. And many of these shrines, we are occupied by these beings. We'll see that also. Last few lines, and then we will close. There, in the heart of vain phenomenon, a phenomenon is there, appearances are there, forms are there, but it's vain. It serves no purpose. there in the heart of vain phenomenon, in an enormous action's writhen core, he saw a shape illimitable and vague, sitting on death who swallows all things born. A chill fixed face with dire and motionless eyes, her dreadful trident in her shadowy hand, outstretched, she pierced all creatures with one fate. This is the only law these beings know. It doesn't matter who you are. You cannot plead mercy. You cannot say, I am a nice human being. Please spare me the suffering. Oh, you are a good human being, all the more. They pierce with the same fate. And these beings have to be tackled and dissolved and converted and transformed before we can really hope to imagine on earth a lasting harmony and peace. This is what Shurbinda said. The debt to Rudra must be paid. The world must be, the world and the heart of man must be ready for peace. Rudra still holds the world in the hollow of his hands. Shiva becomes Rudra there, fierce and terrible. This is the dark domain. We'll continue. We'll finish it by tomorrow or day after, so that we are done with this whole thing and we launch ourselves into the paradise of the life gods. Thank you.